Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of today's survival show. And you are tuning in to episode 107, where it is my goal to help you harness the power of choice, to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms, and strengthen your resolve. I try to keep survival simple, not extreme. This is not a tinfoil hat type of show. I don't get into conspiracy theories. I don't get into strange end-of-the-world scenarios and all that kind of stuff. I just try to keep this rooted in common sense. I talk about everyday living. And once in a while, we talk about everyday disasters. Things that are common to happen. Not things that are pie in the sky, but things that are relatively common. And that's what we talk about on this show, so it's pretty practical. If you're a first-time listener, I just wanted to give you that little intro and tell you what you're tuning into. In this show, I have another interview here for you to listen to. I've made the statement many times. I really enjoy it when listeners to this show come on and share their knowledge with us on this venue. So for the second time, I have the screen. He goes by the screen name Jack Pine Savage, and he's on our forum. He's a very involved member of our forum. He is a deputy sheriff in northern Minnesota. His first name is Greg. And he is going to share his knowledge with us about what happens if you're attacked. What happens if you're a survivor of an attack, a criminal attack of some kind? You know, and again, I like to remain positive on this show. I have a positive attitude, but I'm also a realist. And I know that things happen, violent things happen. And even before a disaster strikes, you could be violently attacked. And you know, I think there's a lot of people that think about this and just don't know what to do. And so I wanted to get Jack Pine Savage on here. Because of his many, many, many years as a deputy sheriff, I wanted to get him on here and talk about. See, the last time we talked about just regular self-defense and so forth. This time he's got some real good law enforcement perspective to share with you about what to do after you're in an attack and what you can do for just some basic non-firearms related self-defense. So, I think you're going to enjoy this quite a bit. I'm not going to take too much away from it. I will let the interview speak for itself. So, with that said, I want to knock out just about 2 minutes worth of announcements. Bear with me, and then we'll play the interview, or I'll play the interview for you, as I guess I'm trying to say. And by the way, you're not going to hear me come on after the interview. This interview is so good, I don't really have anything to add to it. So, you'll just hear some music that will close out the show. So let me knock out the announcements. The website is todayssurvival.com. And the forum, just go to the page, go to the website, todayssurvival.com, and you will see a forum tab. Just click that, and it'll take you to where you want to go. Also, don't forget about the Freedom Raffle. If you want to win a gun or a couple of holsters or a knife, maybe a good survival knife like my K-Bar Becker Companion that I just recently purchased, go to the Freedom Raffle page at todayssurvival.com. Tickets are only $10. Time is running out. All the instructions will be right there on the Freedom Raffle page. And last but not least, don't forget to support Suzanne at allinoneprepareness.com, allinoneprepareness.com. The special is over, but she's still got some very good dehydrated foods on there. Some of these foods that she sells have a shelf life of 27 years. She's not a paid sponsor of the show. I do benefit a little bit when you place an order from her, but I just like her stuff, and that's why I talk about it. I have no real personal interest in it at all, and again, she doesn't pay for me to advertise on this show. I don't have paid sponsors. I like to keep it that way because I like to be able to say whatever I want to say. And so what I'm trying to tell you is she's got good stuff in my humble opinion. So go to allinoneprepareness.com and check that out. And you can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You can go to the website and you can see the Twitter badge and the Facebook badge and everything that I have on there. Everything, all your resources are at todayssurvival.com. That's, oh, by the way, one more thing. Get your raffle tickets, folks, that you can also support the show that way. If you want to support my show, if you find it in your heart, if you think that a small donation would help out, if I've helped you in some way improve your life, get a raffle ticket right now while I've still got the raffle raffle, the Freedom Raffle, going on. That's it. That's all. Short and sweet. I don't like to make this show real commercial. Here's my interview with Greg up in northern Minnesota, Deputy Sheriff, also known as Jack Pine Savage, about common sense ideas on what to do if you are attacked. I want to say, before I sign off, again, remember, this is not the end of the show. This is just the beginning of episode 107, but I'm not going to come on after this interview is over. So I just want to say thanks for tuning in to another episode of today's Survival Show, where it is my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. When you hear this interview, I firmly believe you will definitely strengthen your resolve. Here you go, 15 seconds worth of music, and the interview will start. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time. Okay, today I am joined by Greg in northern Minnesota for round two. He's been on this show before. And thanks for coming on. Greg, you with me?
Yes, I am.
All right, welcome. Greg is a deputy sheriff. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
All right, so I have asked him to come on the show to talk some more about what happens if you get yourself in trouble, what happens if you get attacked. We have a list of questions that I've actually emailed Greg in advance, and I'm going to ask him. And I'm sure he's going to throw some of his own stuff in here. But from a law enforcement perspective, I thought I'd like to get him on the show because, as I've always mentioned, folks, I don't want you to just hear from me. I want you to hear from other people that have a lot of expertise. So how's it been going as a deputy lately?
Oh, very good. Busy.
Is that good or bad?
Well, yeah.
yeah, both, right?
Both. It's good job security, but it's summer, so it's busier. And we're a tourist area, so it's busy, but it's winding down now that school and sports and things have started. We don't have quite the tourist load.
Yeah, exactly. I understand that. And my kid just started school today.
Oh, man. You guys started a little earlier. I shipped one off to college this weekend, and high school starts here in another 2 weeks.
Yeah, we start pretty early here in Texas.
You get done a little earlier, though, too, don't you?
Yeah, end of May.
Okay.
So when I was living up north, when I was your neighbor in Wisconsin, we never started school until after Labor Day. Now everybody's starting in August.
Yeah, and here it's still after Labor Day, and again, part of that, I think, is because it's a tourist area, and they need the kids to work resorts and what have you.
Good point. I didn't think about that. Good. Well, all right. So, refresh my memory. How long have you been a deputy sheriff?
I've been a deputy about 11 years here. I've been in law enforcement 27 years.
Law enforcement 27 years, so you're definitely not new to this ballgame at all.
No, it's not my first rodeo.
All right. Well, let's get into it because I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about. What I wanted you to primarily talk about is what happens, what would you say from your law enforcement perspective that people do in the unfortunate event that they are a victim of an attack, they survive, I hope they survive. That's the premise that we're going to come from. So what red flags would tell you, let's say you're, put yourself in the shoes of someone that's been a victim of a crime, what red flags would occur that would tell you not to talk to the police any further?
All right. Can I preface this that, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to try and give legal advice.
That's good. I'm glad you said that, yes.
But, you know, as a cop, I work from the other side of it. Yes. I also tend to use stories, so any names I use are purely fictitious. I'm not trying to cast slander on anybody's good name. It's just they're made-up names.
Completely like, understood.
I tend to – that keeps us out of court, too.
That's right.
The first thing you should know is if you hear the words, you have the right to remain silent, use them.
Yes.
You know, if they read you your Miranda warning, you're a suspect. and it's time to listen to what they've told you. You have the right to remain silent. If you give up the right to remain silent, anything you can and will be used against you. They've just told you to shut up. You have the right to an attorney. Can't afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you without cost. They tell you you need a lawyer. The Supreme Court in the last 2 months has ruled that, you know, just like you have to affirmatively state, I want an attorney,
yeah,
you have to affirmatively state, I don't want to answer any questions. Just remaining silent does not affirmatively state that, and they can keep questioning you, and anything you say can and will be used against you.
You know, that's a very good point. Seems like a lot of people don't take that seriously enough.
Well, even a fish wouldn't get caught if they didn't open their mouth.
I love it.
another red flag is you hear those three magic words, you're under arrest.
Okay.
Oops, time to shut up.
Okay.
The other one is go with your gut instinct. You know, if things are going along and you're kind of, okay, I'm here, and all of a sudden you start feeling like the only mouse dropped in the middle of a cat show, probably mm-hmm. time to stop talking.
Okay.
You know, it's okay, even at that point, it's okay to point out evidence. You know, quick scenario, you know, Johnny Rotten confronts you with a knife, says, I'm going to kill you. You pull out your Glock and blow him away. As he falls, his knife falls out of his hand and kind of flies under a car that's parked on the street there.
Yeah.
You tell the cops. You know, you call 911, report what happened. They've already got a recording of what you've said, by the way. And you've got other things down the road, and I'll answer that later. But,
right.
You know, the fact that the knife isn't visible anymore, you say it flew under the car. Cops get down, yep, there's a knife. Now we've got his fingerprints and DNA on that knife. Cool. Have you incriminated yourself? Maybe, but you said his knife flew under the car. You've helped yourself at that point.
You've helped yourself at that point?
Yes, because you pointed out that, yeah, what you said to 911 is verified. There's the physical evidence.
Uh-huh.
Pointing out physical evidence that's in on your side is not a bad thing, because sometimes we get so focused in on the process of what we have to do, we tend to overlook things. We're human. And if it gets neglected, missed, whatever, and you've already pointed it out, that's an affirmative on your side. Your attorney,
okay,
and you should have one, will say, hey, why didn't you collect the knife? It was there. He pointed it out to you. Your squad car video shows him pointing it out to you. You know, that's enough to throw a case out of court a lot of times.
Okay, recap that again. I'm not quite following. Maybe try that.
You're walking down the street. Little Johnny Rotten, neighborhood thug, has had an argument with you for years, comes out with a butcher knife, says, I'm going to kill you, and starts running at you.
Okay.
You shoot him.
Yes.
He drops, okay? He drops, and as he falls, his knife flies out of his hand and rolls under a car.
Okay.
You call 911 because you do have a duty to render aid to somebody shooting victims, at least in most states.
Right.
Cops show up. Do you tell them exactly what you told the dispatcher, the 911 operator? Johnny Rotten came at me with a butcher knife, tried to kill me, and I shot him. Cops show up. Where's the knife? It flew under the car. They look under the car. They see it.
Okay.
Things get going. They process the scene. They forget to grab the knife.
Okay.
Now, their squad cars most squad cars have video cameras in them. So it will show the monitor. Most cops have mics on their belt or in their pocket someplace so that everything you're saying is recorded anyway.
Gotcha. Okay.
when it comes to trial, they didn't grab the knife. They're trying to crucify you as a murderer. And you said, why didn't you collect the knife? What knife? And you play back the video and say, the knife is under there, and you see the cop get down and say, yep, there it is. Oops, we forgot to get it. Now it's not homicide, it's justifiable homicide.
Okay, but you as a citizen, all right, so when you say the video gets played in court, all right, so in other words, the court's probably going to subpoena. It can. If your attorney in the court subpoena the evidence, right?
Well, as part of the trial process, just washed my mouth and I can't do a thing with it.
No problem.
Part of the process, the legal process, is something called discovery.
That's correct.
The prosecution has to give all the evidence, everything they have, to the defense attorney, and vice versa.
Okay. You know,
they both have to give them whatever they've got. So if your defense attorney has Masad Ayoub coming in as an expert witness, they have to tell them that.
Okay.
If the prosecution has, you know, a bloodstained knife with your fingerprints on it, your DNA on it, and the blood of the victim because you stabbed them on it, that's going to be your attorney's going to know that too. Okay?
Gotcha.
So everybody's on the same playing field. Everybody sees all the evidence. Now, as part of it is, you know, sometimes, you know, there's no tape or the recorder doesn't work in your car. Okay, that happens. Technology is wonderful. But for the most part, there is a standard request for any squad car videos.
Okay.
So your attorney is going to be able to watch it and say, there we go. They don't have the knife, but you pointed it out on video.
I hear you.
We've got videotape of the cop looking, saying, yep, there it is. You know what? We're human. The cop screwed up, didn't collect it. Does it happen regularly? No. But has it happened? Yeah.
I'm sure it has.
You know, because something else happens and you get distracted and you forget the little details. Well, you know, it happens. Not so much on a homicide. I mean, be honest with you. Homicides are a big case. So they tend to get all the resources. But on a burglary, other things, you know, we tend to miss things on occasion. We're human.
Sure. Sure. All right. That makes good sense. Thanks for sharing that. Getting back to my question then, the red flags is that basically signal you to not talk to the police is when they say you're okay. Under arrest, you have the right to remain silent, they give you your Miranda rights, things like that.
You get a gut instinct that you're all of a sudden in trouble, that, you know, you're the focus of everybody's attention all of a sudden.
Okay.
And you're going to get some of that because you're the survivor, you're the victim.
Right.
You know, but the reality is if you start feeling like the only mouse dropped in the middle of a cat show and everybody's looking at you like you're the prey animal and they're the predators, time to shut up.
Time to shut up. Now, how do you shut up? What do you say? Or do you just not say? are cops going to get mad at you if you don't say anything further?
It's frustrating for us, but if we were in that situation, that's exactly what we would say. I don't want to say any more without my attorney present. I think I'm in trouble. I don't want to say anything else without an attorney present.
Okay, is that what you would encourage people to say?
If you're there, yes. The other red flag is, you know, you're talking to the cop and he's getting pissed. And you can read the body language. You know when somebody's angry. It may be that he's mad at the situation you got put in. It may be that he's mad because little Johnny Rotten was his godson. You know, okay. You don't know. If the officer talking to you is starting to get angry, time to be quiet. And there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, you seem to be getting angry. I'm sorry if I'm making you angry. I don't want to say anymore.
Okay. All right, I got you. So that's all right. So that kind of answers the question as to how and when and what clues you would look for to not say anything.
Right.
Okay. Now let's talk about lawyers, everybody's favorite people. But, you know, I always say that when you need one, your lawyer's your best friend.
Yes, they are. and you wanted to know what type of attorney to have.
Yeah.
What you need is somebody who's, I wrote down three quick people, and two of them are actually the same person for the most part.
All right.
I would go to your local law enforcement or your law enforcement union, the union of whoever your local law enforcement is, and find out who their legal defense plan attorney is.
Okay.
They are specialists in dealing with violence and lethal force encounters, critical incidents is what we call them.
So go to your local law enforcement and find out who their legal defense counsel is?
Yes.
Will they tell you that?
Yeah, it's no big deal.
Okay.
You know, a lot of the local cops probably won't know, but they'll say, well, it's the, you know, the team legal through the union, or it's the Fraternal Order Police legal defense plan.
Okay.
You can go online and find out who the local attorneys in your area are.
Okay. That's good. That's good to know, because I've had a lot of people ask me the question, how do you find an attorney that specializes in this?
Well, some attorneys advertise they specialize in this, but most of them it's like kind of a sideline, but they do have some special. And the reason you want these guys is they have specialized training in critical incidents. They know, for example, that you're going to have situational amnesia, that you can go through this critical incident, and when the adrenaline dump starts, your brain kicks into high gear. It records details that you're not aware that it's recording.
Exactly.
And you can give the most accurate statement you can at the time. 24 hours later, your brain has had a chance to get out of the shock mode and kind of rest and digest it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to remember accurately in order about 60% more.
You know, that's interesting.
Hours, you're up to about 80%, and after 72 hours, about 90-95%. What you'll totally remember.
So that's why people's stories change sometimes.
Yes. It's not that they're trying to make it up or add details to make themselves look better. It's that their body, their physiology has kicked into high gear. Now they've calmed down. Their body's had a chance to process it. Gee, this is what happened. So if you're going to say something at the scene, and be honest, you probably will.
Right.
He came at me with a knife. I had to shoot him.
Sure.
Stick to the facts. Think that you're on Adam 12 and you're talking to Joe Friday. Just the facts.
Just the facts. Just the facts. That's right.
And very basic. When we have an officer involved in a shooting, initially at the scene, he gives a short verbal report. The first day, that's it. Nothing is written down. And his verbal report usually is, are you all right? Where's the suspect? Are there any more suspects? Where's his weapons? You know, those are the kind of things that they're asked. You know, tactical, what's going on now? Are you all right? Kind of questions. After 24 hours, typically, an officer is asked to write a preliminary, and it's titled preliminary report.
Okay.
After 48 hours, they get the 48 to 72, they start and write their final report.
Okay, yeah, I'm following. This is good stuff.
Typically with their attorney sitting there so they word it correctly.
So you know what? Hearing you say this is kind of uncomforting to me, I guess. And the reason I say uncomforting is because so many victims get accused of changing their story, and probably by the prosecution if they've shot somebody. And what you're saying, what I hear you saying, is oftentimes they're not changing the story. They're just remembering more details about it later.
And the problem is prosecutors are not aware of that.
What do you mean they're not aware of that?
They don't know. They haven't had this kind of training.
Really?
Prosecutors have not had. No, they've. Most prosecutors are attorneys that practiced, you know, corporate law someplace and transferred into a prosecutorial line.
Okay, that I didn't know.
You know, attorney's an attorney. It's like a doctor is a doctor. They all do general practice, and then sometimes they specialize. Well,
yeah, okay.
If you specialize in prosecution, you're looking at, you know, what the legal requirement is on statutes and how to get somebody convicted and put in jail. You're not looking at the how to defend somebody against something that's wrong all the time. That's part of it, but it's not the same.
Okay. I see. Very interesting. All right. This is good stuff. And, you know, I think all the listeners are going to appreciate this because I think we all wonder, you know, we've all kind of heard because of that one podcast that I posted, you know, we've all heard, you know, don't say much to the police. But I think a lot of people don't really know what that means or what they would or would not say. So that's good.
Under that kind of stress, people want to talk.
Right.
It's a way to get rid of the adrenaline. They want to talk. If you're going to talk, don't blather. We don't care about, you know, how you felt at the time. What happened?
Yeah. All right. So
kind of attorney, if you can't find one that's specialized, is a criminal defense attorney.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad you brought that up.
Those are the two types. And, you know, either somebody that specializes or the one that represents the cops are the same person most of the time.
So those that represent the cops?
Or the ones that represent the criminals.
yeah, a criminal defense attorney.
Yes, and again, they know how to keep you out of jail or out of prison because you're probably going to go to jail.
But wait a minute, Greg. Okay,
no, so in Texas, probably not. In other states, quite probably you will.
Okay, so I'm involved in an attack. I shoot my gun. I shoot them with my gun in self-defense. I am not the criminal. I was acting in self-defense, but I still might want to contact a criminal defense attorney?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
A couple of reasons for that, and you want a good one. First off, if you've talked to the attorney, he can't represent the suspect that attacked you.
Good point.
And other places I've worked, we had a couple of attorneys that were really good criminal defense attorneys. They were private mm-hmm. practice, not the public defenders.
Right.
And, you know, public defenders get a bad rap, but they try more criminal cases than anybody else. They know the ins and outs of the court system. They're usually some of the best.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
You know, we all cast aspersions on them, but they're good at what they do. But the standard joke was, if I ever get involved in a shooting, I'm calling, you know, I'll call him John for lack of a better term, and trying to get him as my attorney. I know he won't take it because all he does is defense, but at least the bad guy can't get him.
Because you've contacted him.
Right.
Interesting point. All right. Thanks for sharing that with us on attorneys.
One more thing on attorneys, and it's the same advice I give people in the middle of a divorce.
Okay.
If you've got an attorney, listen to them. You're paying for their expertise. Don't sabotage yourself and run off at the mouth. Don't get running off on the internet and posting everything that happened. Listen to your attorney. You're paying for their expertise.
Wow, very good point, especially running off on the internet and posting everything. That's a big temptation that I think a lot of people may have.
Especially in today's society where everything is in the open. You know what? Look at the professional poker players. They don't lay their cards on the table and then start playing the game. They keep them to themselves until that hand's over.
Good point. All right. Thanks for that advice on getting a lawyer and stuff. That's good. Okay, so I also asked you to talk about some steps to take if you're attacked, and of course you survive the attack. What do you advise people to do right after the attack has happened?
Well, get to someplace safe. If it's safe, the attack's over, you've scanned, you know, there's nobody else around, holster your gun or whatever you've got,
right,
and then call 911.
Okay. Now, we've heard that a lot. We've heard that a lot, but why is that?
Well, there's several reasons. In most states, I won't say all, but most states, you have an affirmative duty to render aid to a shooting victim or to a victim of an assault.
Okay.
I'm the one who called. He needed help. Okay?
All right.
Secondly, you want to be the first one to call. If you pull your gun on little Johnny Rotten with the knife, and instead of having to shoot him, he turns and runs.
Yeah.
You don't want him running home, calling the cops, saying, you know, Bob Main pulled his gun on me, threatened me with a gun.
Right.
You want to say, Johnny Rotten pulled a knife on me, threatened to kill me, I pulled my gun, and he turned and ran away. A lot of states, you know, depending on the state, Minnesota's a one-party consent state for recording. What that means is I could be recording this conversation and not have to tell you.
Okay.
We both know it's being recorded. You're recording it. But
right.
As a practical matter, you know, Minnesota's a one-party consent state. There are states that have informed consent, and you have to have beepers going off when you're recording, you know, the recording's running, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The exception to all of that is emergency 911 communications. They are recorded without anybody's consent nationwide.
That's true. Good point.
The dispatchers, the operators, cannot turn it off. Short of a malfunction, everything said on that line is recorded and admissible in court.
Now, that's admissible in court nationwide, is it not?
Yes, it is, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
And mostly because there's the assumption that, you know, it's 911, it's going to be recorded.
Yeah.
But you want to be the one to call first, and, again, stick to the facts.
Yeah, and so you want your story to be heard first in an avenue that is recorded for sure and admissible in court.
Mm-hmm.
I got you. All right, that's good. That's good. So after you call 911, then what?
Do what they tell you. If they say, okay, well, we know little Johnny Rotten, and he would have done that, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Go on about your business. And, you know, the sad thing is, I don't know a lot of the good people in my county. I know. I mean, I do, but I know all the thugs. And I can probably give you most of their full names and dates of birth.
I bet you can.
So, you know, typically you're going to be told to wait until the law enforcement arrives, and they're going to want a taped statement from you.
Right.
As to what happened. You know, you're the victim. No charges being filed at this point. Come up and say, put a recorder in your face. Can I get a taped statement, a recorded statement? Okay, I'll give you a recorded statement. What happened? And they'll ask you your name and your address and your birthday and your phone number and all that stuff to start it out. And then they'll ask you to tell them what happened.
Right.
Stick to the facts. And preface your statement saying, you know, I'm kind of shook. I understand that my recall is going to be better in a couple days. I'll give you a preliminary. If you come back and interview me in a couple days, I'll be more than happy to give you a complete one, because I'm kind of in shock right now.
Oh, that's good. That's a good point.
You've admitted that you know what's going on and that you're in shock. You give them the preliminary and you give them a better one in 2 to 3 days. Now you've had a chance to rest and digest. Your brain is kicked into gear. And you can give them an exact and accurate description of everything that happened.
Okay.
And a classic example is, somebody pulls a gun on you. A lot of times you won't be able to tell me what color shirt they were wearing, even though the sleeve was buttoned right down to the wrist.
Sure, because you go into such shock and...
You see the gun. Now,
yeah.
The other thing you want to add is, you know, if he pulled a knife, I know it wasn't that, probably wasn't that big, but it looked like a sword.
Exactly.
You know,
all of a sudden.
What you've done is you've said, I know it's not that big, but it looked like a sword. It looked so big. What that does is when you go back to give your second statement and more accurate details, He said, yeah, I've had a chance to calm down. I realized that thing wasn't a sword. It was a, you know, Swiss Army knife or whatever it was. Somebody pulls a little mouse gun on you, a 25 Raven. They're not a big gun, but it looked like a cannon. I know it wasn't.
Boy,
it couldn't have been, but it looked like a cannon.
If somebody's pointing it at you, it looks like a 50 BMG at that time, you know?
But if you preface it with that, I know it can't have been, but it looked like a cannon. I'm pretty shook, you know. Now when you give your statement a couple days later and they compare them, okay, he's admitted he's shook. Well, they'll toss the first one out.
Okay.
Or they won't give it a lot of credibility or credence when it comes to what happened.
The first statement, you mean?
Right. As long as you preface it, saying, I'm pretty shook. I'll tell you basics, but ask me in a couple of days when I've had a chance to calm down. I'm more than willing to cooperate.
That makes real good sense.
Well, it protects you from, you know, winding up lying to the officers, because you tell them, I don't want to lie to you either by overtly lying to you or by omitting details that I know are in my memory, but I'm so shook I can't get them out right now.
Right.
And I guess I wouldn't put it that way, because then they're going to paint you as mentally defective. But, you know, I'm so shook that I'm having trouble with, things right now. I'm pretty shook.
I think that's a great thing to say. Hey, I'm shaken up right now. I'm having trouble with my recall. And come back in a couple days, and I can probably give you more details.
Any cop that's had the training knows exactly what you're talking about, you know, and...
What if it's a new cop that hasn't had the training?
Well, most of them, and again, every state is different, every area is different. Bruce Seidel, I can never pronounce his name, Seidel, founder of PPCT, did the research. So the research is there. And PPCT, or Pressure Point Control Tactics, is... fairly commonly taught in most law enforcement academies. Not all, but most. So as part of the basic recruit training, they know the physiology and the psychology of what happens to somebody under a critical incident stress.
Okay.
They're taught it. They may not remember it until somebody says, oh yeah, I remember something about that.
So they remember it even though they may not remember it at the time, correct?
Right, correct. Or they may not think of it as applying to Joe Citizen. You know, they think of it as applying to cops. Well, you know, cops think of things applying to cops. Lawyers think of things as applying to lawyers. You know, salesmen think of things as how they apply to salesmen.
Correct.
You don't always think as how they apply to the other group.
Right. Makes good sense. Okay. Thanks for sharing that stuff about, what to say, how to say it, things like that. Next question. Let's talk about non-gun weapons. You know, not everybody can carry. I usually encourage that people do if they legally can, but not everybody can. So what non-gun weapons are usually justified in police's mind? And I'm thinking things like flashlights, pepper spray, mace, keys, you know, knives, stuff like that. I know every state's different, but like where you come from, is some of that stuff frowned upon?
And that was what I was going to say is if you can carry a gun, carry one.
I fully
agree. Everybody should carry a gun, period. But, and it does depend on the state. I know Minnesota is fairly liberal when it comes to what you can carry. You know, if you want to come up here and buy a taser and carry a taser, knock yourself out. You want to carry pepper spray? Carry pepper spray.
Yeah.
You want to carry a knife, a flashlight, an expandable baton? Go ahead. In Minnesota, it's your intent for carrying it that makes it illegal.
Oh, really? All right. Explain that.
If you're carrying it with the intent to use it as a dangerous weapon or for criminal activities to assault somebody, then it's illegal.
Okay.
If you're carrying it because it's dark out and you want to see, or you need to cut string, or you're going hunting, or you just want to carry it, or you're carrying it for self-defense, that's perfectly legal.
I see.
It really comes down to how you employ it.
Okay, so what is used to determine your intent for carrying it? Is it how you deployed it? Is that what they use?
Pretty much. If you're carrying a flashlight and somebody comes at you with a ball bat and you thump them with it, okay, that's self-defense.
Right.
If the same guy's walking down the street with the ball bat and you thump him, even though he's made no threat, now it's an illegal weapon.
Now it's an offensive weapon. Okay.
And you know, there are circumstances that allow that too, but I'm not going to get into all the security guard regulations, that sort of thing.
Well, all right. Now, I know you're going to talk about Minnesota law because that's what you know, but let's say, I mean, I carry a pocket knife every single day, as well as my gun. So what if I don't go to my gun for some reason? What if all of a sudden I take my knife out? Now, you know, quite frankly, my intent for carrying my knife is for utility. I don't carry this knife for self-defense. But if I was in Minnesota and I pulled it out to defend myself, you're saying that's how they would judge why I'm carrying the knife?
No, that's how you use the knife. There are tools that, for example, flashlight. Anybody can carry a flashlight.
Exactly.
You know, it's not a big deal. But if you're carrying a multi-cell mag light, and you're using it to light your way, that's cool. If you're carrying it full of sand, that's a weapon versus batteries. Now, if you use it as a weapon, it was used as a weapon. Your intent to carrying it is, why were you carrying this? I always carry it. It's to cut string, or it's to light my way. Okay, that's why you were carrying it.
Okay.
It becomes incumbent upon law enforcement at that point to prove you were carrying it for any legal purpose.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And I think that kind of plays into the philosophy of doing what you can so that you don't make it look like you're out to get somebody.
I'm a big proponent of canes, as we've had on the forum. A walking stick. How do you argue with that? It's a mobility aid. It's a cane.
Right.
The fact that I used it to defend myself, it's still a cane. It's not a blackjack. It's not a nightstick. It's a cane. It's a flashlight. It's a pocket knife. You know, Minnesota does not have a blade length requirement or limit on knives.
Would you believe we do in Texas?
Yes, I do. I heard that. They went to a 5.5-inch blade length.
Yeah.
Now, you carry that across the border into other states, that 5.5-inch blade, and you're illegal because they have a 4-inch limit.
That's right.
And one of your neighbors, and I don't know which one or two of them have a 4-inch limit.
I want to say Oklahoma, but maybe not.
I think so, too, but I'm not real sure, so I wasn't going to say. But, so, you know, something that's legal in your state is illegal across the border. Wisconsin doesn't allow civilians to have pepper spray or tasers.
Yeah, they don't like to. My home state of Wisconsin doesn't like to allow citizens to do much of anything to defend themselves. I'm disappointed with that.
Well, what do you do?
I mean, you move. That's what I did. Maybe a change in governor there will make a difference. Who knows?
Well, the governor just signs or vetoes, so it's kind of up to the legislature there.
From what I understand, I mean, let's take a sidestep here from the original topic. From what I understand, concealed carry was actually passed in Wisconsin, but the governor vetoed it.
Okay, then you need to get rid of him.
Yeah, I think he needs to go. Jim Doyle is his name, and anybody from Wisconsin listening to this program, help vote him out.
Can't argue with you.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so back to non-guns. basically what your point is, carry whatever you feel like, just make sure that you have the proper intent for carrying it.
Again, depending on the state, there are some things that, for example, brass knuckle, metal knuckles,
yeah,
because they're made out of other than brass. I don't know of a state that those are legal in, anywhere in the country.
I don't either.
So, you know, yeah, you can get them on your belt buckle. You can have them on your desk as a paperweight. The minute you pick them up and use them or carry them as a weapon, guess what? You're now a criminal.
Mm.
And I guess this kind of dovetails into the next piece of what's not justified. You went to that question.
Yes, well, I did.
My first thought on that was to take a book from some of my favorite TV shows. Well, dropping an anvil on somebody's head or a piano out of a second-story window on them or anything sold to coyotes by Acme would probably be illegal.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
You know, anything that's not legal in your state, you know, something illegal is going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, most states, switchblades are illegal.
That's
not
correct.
All, but most. Minnesota, they're illegal to carry, but you can possess them and own them for collection. Now, I could take them to a show and be transporting one to a show for a display, you know, my collection or whatever, and, okay, that's cool. Along the way, I have violated no laws. Somebody attacks me, and I grab, and that's the first thing I grab, and I use that. Now I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, metal knuckles. And, you know, you got the little keychain things that look like knuckles or whatever. Those are questionable.
Okay.
As far as cops looking at them, it's like, well, you're going to lose them in all probability, but probably won't be charged with them. But, you know, it's questionable. It raises a red flag in our mind.
Yeah. So basically, I guess what I understand you're saying is just stay away from the illegal stuff. Just about anything else is probably going to be justified.
Yeah. Again, depending on your state and jurisdiction.
Yeah, but, and I know there's – I'm going to go ahead and put a disclaimer on this. I mean, I'm sure in California and New York and New Jersey and places like that in Maryland, you may have a harder time justifying things than you would in Texas or Oklahoma or Arkansas or even Minnesota.
That's correct. However, yeah, a cane is still a cane.
Yes, it is. You know, but let's talk about cane for a minute because I know you brought that up, and it's a good point. But – you know, I mean, what about someone perfectly healthy that obviously doesn't need a cane to get around? Wouldn't that look a little suspicious?
Really? You've never thrown your back out? You've never wrenched your back?
Well, yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I've done that several times.
You've never pulled a muscle on your back or your leg?
Yeah, well, yes, I have.
Just a little help?
Good point. All right, you got me on that one.
If you walk onto an airplane through an airport with a wooden cane, nothing, not a sword cane, just a cane, you can walk on the airplane with it. We've had people in jail with canes.
That's true. You're right. You're right. And, you know, there's another podcast out there called the Practical Defense Podcast by Alex Haddix, and I want to give a shout out to him. He's a big proponent of just using flashlights. And flashlights are easy to take. Certain flashlights are easy to take on airplanes because it's just a flashlight.
Again, you're correct. You know, as far as I lost my train of thought. Boarding at the station, I guess.
That's okay. You were talking about people in jail with canes and people boarding airplanes with canes, and that was my question: is a perfectly healthy person needing a cane?
It becomes incumbent upon them to prove that you're perfectly healthy and need it.
Or that you don't need it.
Yeah. As most of the people on the podcast have listened before know, I train martial arts.
Yeah.
The founder of the association I train in is 80-something. And you see him go into an airplane, and he looks like the most decrepit old man in the world. He walks out the front door of the airport. His cane goes over his shoulder, and he damn near skips across the parking lot.
No kidding.
He carries it. It's a weapon. And in his hand, it's a lethal weapon.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Okay. You know, if you're going to carry a flashlight,
yeah,
that's where I was going. Find a law enforcement trainer or a security trainer, somebody that will teach you how to use it effectively.
That's good.
And I recommend them because that's court defensible. You know, going to the local dojo and learning how to use a flashlight to defend yourself is good training. And it's probably the exact same thing. But, you know, you went to John's school of ninja training versus, this is the same guy that teaches the cops. Which is going to sound better in court?
Well, of course, you got trained by the guy who teaches the cops. That's going to sound better.
They taught you exactly the same thing. But
right.
This is court defensible.
Sure, because of the credibility of the people who taught it to you.
That's correct.
Yeah. Very good.
I mean, as dumb as that sounds, you know, it's very easy to use a flashlight for self-defense or even a closed pocket knife, like a URA stick.
Mm-hmm.
You strike the same points. And now, if I pull my knife out and use it closed, is that deadly force? Well, it can be.
Yeah.
But for the most part, no, it's not. You're using it as a blunt force impact weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another reason to carry your knife. It's an intermediate weapon when I use it closed.
Good point. Very good point. All right. So in the essence of time, a couple more things, and then I want to wrap it up. This is something that I kind of have a personal interest in asking this because it's something I've always wondered for myself. What should you do if you're a witness to a crime?
Call 911.
Okay. I figured that.
Somebody else probably will, but call 911 and then tell the truth.
Okay.
You know, again, if you're shook up and it's affected you personally where you're shook up, admit it.
You know, same thing.
Cops, same thing. But it's less likely that you're going to go into that fight or flight mode of problems. So tell the truth. You know, if you see, you know, two guys fighting and you didn't see who threw the first punch, tell them. I don't know who started it, but they were both fighting.
Or if you're a witness to a shooting and you don't know who actually started it, at least say that, right?
Right. You're sitting in your driveway and there's a van parked across the street, or you're sitting in a Walmart and there's a van parked there. And you see, you know, little Georgie gangbanger pull out his pistol and go walking around the side of the van. You hear a couple of shots and you see, you know, little Susie come walking around the other side with two holes in her. Is it probably not good odds that he shot her?
Yeah, probably pretty good odds, yeah.
But you don't say he shot her. You said he walked around, I heard two shots, she come around the other side bleeding.
Well, why don't you say, how come you don't say he shot her?
You didn't see it.
Okay, because you didn't see it, yeah.
Just the facts.
Just the facts.
Just the facts. The truth will set you free. Don't add to it. Don't ad lib it. Don't make it up.
Yeah. Yeah, because you didn't see it, so really you don't want to say, I think he shot her, because you don't know.
You can say that. You think he did, but don't say, yeah, he shot her.
Oh, okay.
Because you don't know. She may have taken the gun and tried to commit suicide. You know, we don't know. Somebody else might have shot her, and he just happened to be in the wrong place at the right time.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, we don't know exactly what happened. That's what the cops are for. We have to go sort that crap out.
Very good. Very good. All right.
You know, if you witness a crime and the officers want to talk to you, they know you were there, you know, you're a witness, there's some specific reasons you do need to talk to the police.
And that would be what?
Well, in Minnesota, it's a crime to aid an offender. It just made a felony crime to aid an offender. Somebody that you know is an offender and running from the police or hiding from the police, and you aid them, it's a felony. Okay. Doesn't matter if they committed a misdemeanor, you're committing a felony. Intentionally aiding an offender. The other one is obstructing legal process. I understand there's times where people don't want to get involved. But you get a young, aggressive cop that, you know, hasn't dealt with people enough and doesn't have a lot of people skills.
Right.
Well, tell me what happened. I don't want to. I'm afraid. They can charge you and arrest you for obstructing legal process.
Just based on that?
Is it likely to? Is it going to stick? No. But is it going to cost you time and effort in court and attorney's fees?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I mean, at what point do you say enough's enough?
Yeah. All right, that's a good point. You know, and exactly, that's going to cost you a lot.
And then you've got the negative name with the local law enforcement. No, he's uncooperative. And, you know, whether you like it or not, whether you believe it or not, reputation goes a long way.
Yeah, it's true. Or lack of a reputation. In other words, if you don't have a bad reputation.
That's correct. You know, the fact that you have none means you're probably just an average Joe citizen. You
right.
got a good reputation as being, yeah, he's cooperative. He tells us everything we need to know. He helps us. That goes a long way, and that goes a long way in court.
It does, okay.
Sure, because the court has said, well, yeah, this person's a reliable informant. He has told us exactly the truth on, you know, four different times, five different times. And when he said, you know, he saw this, he saw it. That's how they work narcotics. They get, you know, somebody that is a criminal for the most part. They'll have him make a couple of buys. Now he's a reliable informant because he said, you know, Georgie gangbanger had meth and I bought meth off him three times. Okay. Now when he says, Janice the junkie has gotten in 4 kilos of cocaine and I saw it, she keeps it here in this room. He doesn't have to go buy it. He saw it. The report will say confidential informant, whatever, reported that this was there. He's been made reliable in the past by several buys. Boom, they go and they get a search warrant, and they go get her kilo of cocaine.
Okay.
Now, that's a simplified version of it, but that's, you know, you keep records, and they're referred to as, you know, confidential informant, you know, 1, 2, 3, or XYZ, or whatever they're assigned. And you keep a file on your confidential informants, and they are not generally given to the court, other than the judge will see it the first couple times, just say, okay, I know who this person is, and it's not released to defense attorneys or even prosecuting attorneys. All they know is a confidential informant that's a reliable confidential informant.
Okay, very interesting. That's,
this
is good stuff.
That's to protect them. But you know, if you're a witness, tell the truth.
Tell the truth. That's the overriding theme here is if you're a witness, just tell the truth. Stick to the facts. Don't embellish anything. And you know, get 911 on the phone and tell the truth.
And you know what? If you don't know or you're fuzzy in your memory, I really don't recall. I don't know. I didn't see.
Do you think that there's a lot of people that are witnesses that just don't want to say anything because they're afraid of being considered as an accessory?
Or they're afraid of retaliation.
Or retaliation.
And, you know, that's where you get the mature cop that says, okay, I understand that. I'm not going to push it. You're not going to get charged with anything. But you get some of the young cops that are fresh out of the academy, go, go, go. They're in what's referred to as the chewing puppy stage. You know what a chewing puppy like? They're chewing on everything.
That's a good.
And I had a boss that referred to him that way, and I thought, you know, he's absolutely right. During the chewing puppy stage, we're standing on a corner directing traffic in the middle of Siberia is interesting.
They'll take anything and do anything just because they're trying to make a name for themselves.
And it's all new and exciting.
It's new and exciting, and they're exploring, and they're having a good time. They just got their badge, and they're all pumped up and ready to go.
Yes. You know, and pick your profession. Everybody goes through that. It's new, it's exciting, they're going to give it their all.
Yeah.
And there's always some that give it way more than their all and give everybody a black eye.
Well, and you're right. And, you know, I don't want anybody listening to this to think that I'm picking on cops by leading you into saying this because, you know, here you are. You are a law enforcement officer. So you know I'm not trying to pick on cops. But there are some that, like you said, they're in the chewing puppy or they're in the gung-ho stage. And, you know, sometimes they can work against you.
Well, it's like anything. You know, people are people. And young kids are young kids. A two-year-old's a two-year-old. Doesn't matter if they happen to be 21, they're still a 2-year-old in the profession, and they're tavering around trying to figure out how to do their job.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is good. You're a wealth of knowledge, Greg. I appreciate it. We got about 2-3 minutes or so. I'm done with my questions. What would you like to close with?
If you can get your concealed carry permit or license, whatever it's called in your state, get it and carry. I also listen to your Handgun World podcast. Put a plug in for that. It's a great program.
Thank you.
You know, I listen to it and my blood starts boiling because you'll say something and I'll shut it off and I'll turn, go back and listen to it a little bit later and you've addressed that issue. It's like, why didn't I just keep listening?
Wait a minute. What do I say that gets your blood boiling?
I can't think of anything specifically. Oh, yes, I can. You know, you're a Glock guy, and you're always apologizing for being a Glock guy. We know you're a Glock guy. Don't apologize.
Well, and you know what? All right, thank you. You know what's funny is I just took a class this weekend. You'll hear about it. Actually, by the time this show airs, you will have already heard about it. And I'm in this class with 7 people, and 6 of us have Glocks, and one guy has a 1911. But I got to say, the 1911 ran just fine. But the reason I apologize for that sometimes, and I won't. I'll take your advice. I won't apologize for that too much. I don't want people to think that I'm only advocating one type of weapon. I would just assume that people understand that, you know, any of them are better than not having one, and if it works for you, it works.
Well, and that's it. You know, I'd give you a bad time about carrying a Glock because I'm a 1911 guy, but what do I carry at work? A county-issued Glock because I have no choice.
Yeah.
You know, and your argument on grip angles, I don't like the grip angle on a Glock. However, I can still shoot it very well.
Good point.
You know, it shoots well. They're reliable. They're accurate. I just don't like them.
Yeah, well, and that's fine. What works for you works for you.
There's Ford people, there's Chevy people, there's GM people, and there's Lamborghini people. You know what?
That's right.
Drive what you want to drive.
I'm a Chevy guy, I guess.
and I don't have brand loyalty. I've had just about everything except the Lamborghini. I don't own those.
Yeah.
That's beyond my lifestyle.
Yeah.
But, you know, carry it and just keep your head out of your rear end, for lack of a better term, you know.
Exactly.
Keep your eyes up and open. One of the things that just drives me to absolute distraction, and my kids are just as bad as anybody, you got the headphones in and they're walking along totally oblivious to the world around them.
Not good.
No. It makes me want to walk up with a pair of scissors and cut the headphones, but...
not good. Boy, isn't that actually an accident waiting to happen, huh?
Yeah. I mean, granted, you know, you're sitting in your room studying, doing something, that's fine. I don't have to listen to your music, that's fine. But if you're going to be out in public, turn off the phone, you know, pull the phone out of your ear when you're driving. Pay attention to what you're supposed to be doing.
Right. Yeah.
And having said that, you know, I'm listening, talking on radios and cell phones and everything else while I'm working, so I'm as big a hypocrite as they come, but.
Well, and what's funny you say that, because a lot of people email me and say that they listen to this show while they're working or driving or jogging and stuff like that, you know. So,
if you go out in my driveway to my squad car, I think I've got the first 100 and some episodes of Today's Survival on disc in my car.
So don't say that too loudly there, okay?
Tongue firmly placed in my cheek, yeah.
Yeah, really.
But, you know, just be aware of what's going on. Have people be aware of what's going on around them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. All right. Thank you. I really appreciate it. We're going to have to sign off because I don't want it to drag on too long. But you know what? Time flew by so fast. Your information is so good that it just it went by fast. So
thanks
a lot. Greg, thanks again. I appreciate that very, very much. And thank you for serving us for so long in law enforcement. I hope you have continued success.
Well, thank you. You're more than welcome.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.